This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Happy opening day, everybody. That's right, the opening day for Major League Baseball is here. I hope you're as excited as I am. I actually made notes for this Extra Bases podcast. Yes, notes. I don't normally make notes that often, although I'm starting to do it a little bit more. And I'm even using exclamation marks in my notes. And I really, really, really don't like exclamation marks, especially in things like emails. But I'm excited. I hope you're excited. It's another edition of the Extra Bases podcast on theact.com. I am Dustin McComas from orangebloods.com. This is episode 35, and this is going to be our Major League Baseball predictions episode. I'm going to go through my picks for every division winner, every wild card winner, the National League Championship Series, the American League Championship Series, and finally a World Series prediction, which I have a strong World Series prediction this year. This is probably the first year I haven't had one that I'm like, you know what, this is it. It's going to happen. I'm just convinced. So I kind of played the odds a little bit as it relates to a World Series prediction. But we'll get to that. And I also want to throw out some player awards as well. Maybe that helps you with some of your fantasy baseball stuff. And at the end, I want to go through some last-minute fantasy baseball tips. If you're still drafting a team, like, you know, I recently just drafted another team last minute. I like to wait as long as I can because, you know, just get a better feel for who's going to make the roster and injuries and things like that. Of course, if you do your homework and you project correctly, you can get an advantage over people. If you draft earlier in some of those early drafts against people that haven't really done as much research, or maybe there's a skill gap, they just aren't quite as good and knowledgeable as you are. But I tend to wait to avoid the injury stuff. Like Francisco Lindor just got injured again, although it was just a sprained ankle. Jose Ramirez got hit by a pitch the other day, so small things like that. But we'll go through some last-minute fantasy baseball tips. But really, I want to get to all the Major League Baseball stuff, and I'm not going to waste a lot of time because there's a lot to get to when we're going to be actually looking through each and every prediction. I'm going to start with the American League East. Here's how I got it finishing: Red Sox, Yankees, Rays, Blue Jays, Orioles. Basically, this is a strong division at the top. There are three good teams, three potentially really good teams. I think the Rays are on the cusp of being a team that could be really good. I really like some of the things they did in the offseason. If Tyler Glasnow can be the pitcher they think he can be in terms of strike throwing, because all this dude has to do is throw strikes. His stuff is that good. He'll get a ton of outs if he can throw strikes, but he's a tall guy. He's got a lot of moving limbs in his delivery. They've tried to mess with the delivery some. I followed him a lot as a Pirates fan, and he just hasn't ever been able to throw strikes consistently. But the Rays think that they've got something there with him, and if he's able to be what they think he can be, I think that that's a team that could make the playoffs. But as always, for the last, I don't know, last few decades, it seems like it's been like this since I've been alive. The Red Sox and Yankees will probably be battling for those top two spots. Both those teams on paper are really good. Of course, the Red Sox coming off the World Series title last year bring back a lot of those pieces. I really like Alex Cora as a manager. I think that the Red Sox have a big advantage there over the Yankees, not just from an in-game or playoff strategy type thing. I think the way he manages personalities and chemistry and those things over a 162-game season is one of the reasons why I put the Red Sox ahead of the Yankees. And of course, no bias at all, me being a Red Sox guy. No, never any Red Sox bias. Down to the AL Central, I've got it going as the Indians, Twins, White Sox, Royals, and Tigers. This division has a chance to be really, really, really bad. And I've got the Indians at the top still. Lindor is only going to be out hopefully a few weeks. He's one of my favorite players. They'll probably get him back sooner as opposed to later. It didn't sound like the Jose Ramirez thing is serious. Eventually, later in the year, they'll probably get back Danny Salazar as well, who's got some big-time stuff on the mound. I have them winning this division because their pitching is still really, really good. Their outfield, to me, is a big concern. I know they just signed Carlos Gonzalez to a deal, but Carlos Gonzalez home road splits in his career. His weighted runs created at home were 132. Of course, he played a lot of his career in Colorado. On the road, they were 94. He's kind of on a decline in terms of skill and things like that. So I don't know if that's a fix for them in the outfield. They still have Lindor when he's healthy and Ramirez, though. And those are two of the best players in baseball. So they've got enough offense to really help support that pitching staff. That pitching staff could be really, really good when you start looking at guys like Clevinger and Carrasco and Kluber, and then you throw in Shane Bieber, an up-and-coming prospect. So I have them winning the division. The Twins are kind of on the cusp of competing, I think. I'm just not there with them yet. They did some nice things in the offseason. I think they might be in the mix for a wild card, but I can't see them punching a playoff ticket this year. The bottom third of that the division, I went White Sox, Royals, Tigers, which might surprise some people. With the White Sox, I now that they've got Eloy Jimenez locked up, of course, we talked about his extension on the last Extra Bases podcast. He's going to be their opening day. I think he's going to be an instant impact player. I want to buy in on Yoan Moncada with the changes that he's made, being more aggressive. You look at his batted ball stuff in terms of, you know, how hard he hits the baseball when he makes contact with it, and he hammers the ball. I mean, it's elite level stuff. So I think that if they can get him to consistently be more aggressive, to go hunt for more contact, I think that can help him. And let's not forget, this is a guy with huge tools that's still a really, really young player. So, you know, they got Yonder Alonso, they got Jose Abreu. They do have some pieces there as they try to jumpstart this rebuild process. So I actually have them finishing ahead of the Royals and Tigers. The Tigers, to me, are going to be one of the worst teams in baseball. You know, not worse than the Orioles, because I think they're going to be – might be the worst team in baseball, period. But they're going to be really, really bad. And the Royals, to me, are really interesting because while all these teams are kind of snatching up, you know, power and things like that, and the stolen base is kind of falling out of favor some – they're just kind of all in on steals. They've got some guys in their lineup that just might run like crazy every time they get on base. And I think that they're going to be an interesting team to watch from that standpoint. I know that they're not treating this as an experiment for stolen bases and how they influence the game and all these things. But I do think we might look at them as the year goes on and see what they're doing from an aggressiveness standpoint on the bases and maybe rediscover some of the value in the stolen base that goes beyond the, hey, you have to steal, you have to be successful in your stolen base attempts by like 75%, or I forget what the number is now, to where it actually adds to your run value per inning and per situation, as opposed to taking away from it. So, you know, maybe we'll rediscover that, hey, these teams, when they're aggressive, like their hitters hit better in these situations, or their pitchers are more likely to throw this in these situations and things like that. So I don't think they're going to be a good team, but I do think that they're going to be an interesting team to follow. In the AL West, I think it's clearly a one-team division. It's the Astros and it's everybody else. I know the A's had a really good season last year, overachieved. I like what they have offensively. Matt Chapman's a future star as just an outstanding two-way player. I mean, watching that guy play defense is a lot of fun, worth the price of admission. And then he can swing the bat as well, and they've got Chris Davis, obviously, and they're gonna you know, fine tune their lineup in a way to get their best right handed bats and best left handed bats in the game in certain situations. Of course, they had the tough news with Matt Olson breaking his hamate bone in that wrist, and that can really linger for power guys for a while. So that's gonna be a blow for them. But they do have some offense. My thing with them, though, is their opening day starter was Mike Fiers. You know, Jesus Luzardo got hurt, so they're probably going to be slow with him. A.J. Puck recovering from Tommy John surgery. Jarrell Cotton had Tommy John surgery last year. I just don't see it with the arms, and I think that organization lacks some pitching depth because some of its top guys are hurt. So I can't see them making a run at the playoffs this year. I actually think that the Angels are better suited to potentially make a run at the playoffs, because the Angels have to have a season where they don't have horrible pitching luck, right? I mean, there's got to be a point where they don't have a bunch of guys get hurt every single year, although I know that they have some guys in their rotation that do have a lot of injury history. Tyler Skaggs, Andrew Heaney, Matt Harvey, Trevor Cahill. So, you know, what's the best predictor for injuries? It's past history. So if you've got pitchers that have had a lot of injuries in their past, chances are they're going to be more likely to have injuries in the future. So perhaps this is just the way the Angels are going to be. But I do think that they have to have a season where they get some positive injury luck for a change. So I've got them finishing second in the West. I think that they could compete for a wild card if everybody stays healthy or relatively healthy in that rotation. They've got the bats to do it, I think. They're starting to get some minor league talent that's about to rise to the major league ranks. Matt Tice is kind of blocked right now, but that's a guy that could break through. Maybe Joe Adell is so good early on this season or midway through the season that he forces his way to the major league level, because we're seeing some teams put 20-year-olds on the roster. I'll get to that in a second when we get to the National League, but we're seeing a lot of organizations that aren't being as shy about pushing some of these guys forward if they think they're ready. So perhaps he can come up and give them a boost. The Rangers, to me, I know there's probably a bunch of Rangers listeners out there since this is an Austin-centric or Texas-centric podcast. The Rangers, to me, are kind of stuck in that weird place where they need to rebuild, but they also have enough decent pieces to where they might compete if everything breaks the right way. You know, you look at guys like Nomar Mazara, who I'm high on. I mean, he's still a really young hitter. If Rougned Odor can bounce back, he's always going to have the strikeout issues. But there is some hitting talent there. Obviously, Joey Gallo can pound the ball. Ronald Guzman, once upon a time, was a top prospect. Willie Calhoun, the guy they got from the Dodgers in the Yu Darvish deal. I saw him at AAA in Round Rock and thought he was a future impact bat. So they do have some guys offensively. But their pitching staff, it's funny. I think they clearly just went with the method of, let's get guys that are cheap, that have, you know, are coming off of injuries and that are kind of like, you know, cheap but potentially high reward pitchers. If you look at guys like Drew Smyly and Shelby Miller, guys that when they're healthy, they've been good pitchers, but they just have never ever been healthy. So who knows? If those guys are able to stay somewhat healthy, that might make the Rangers better than we think. But obviously that's a big risk when you're asking those guys to throw a lot of innings for you. I've got the Mariners last. I was a little higher on them before spring training. They just did not get good reviews. And I know they started 2-0 in the Tokyo series against the A's, which, Mitch Haniger is a really good player. Daniel Vogelbach, I think, is an underrated guy for fantasy purposes. If he can get some consistent at-bats, he gets on base a lot, and he can really mash the ball as well. I like Justice Sheffield, the pitcher they got from the Yankees at the end. Not at the end, but this summer in the James Paxton deal. Marco Gonzalez is a solid arm. So they do have some interesting pieces, some young guys that could get into the mix, but their outfield defense might be really, really, really bad. Playing guys like Jay Bruce in your lineup every single day. Felix Hernandez is awful. I mean, he just doesn't look like a guy that cares that much anymore. And from talking to some people that saw a bunch of spring training games in Arizona, the Mariners did not get very good review. So Edwin Diaz is gone, and I don't think that this organization is going to win all those close one-run games that they won last year. In fact, it's probably going to flip on them, and they might end up being one of the worst teams in baseball. So that's a quick run-through of the American League. I've got the Red Sox winning the East, Indians winning the Central, Astros winning the West, AL East again, Red Sox, Yankees, Rays, Blue Jays, Orioles. Three teams clearly above the rest in that division. The Central, Indians, Twins, White Sox, Royals, Tigers, kind of a two-team division there. And then the AL West, Astros, and then everybody else. Astros, Angels, A's, Rangers, Mariners. In the American League wild card, I've actually got three teams making the playoffs from the AL East. I've got the Yankees, Red Sox, and then the Rays. I really like what the Rays are doing. They have a lot of young talent. I think that they're very progressive in the way they identify talent and, you know, how to score runs, how to prevent runs, those things. Blake Snell is awesome. They went out and spent money on Charlie Morton, who hasn't shown any signs of declining recently. If I mentioned Glasnow, then they're going to use the opener. I think their bullpen's good. They've got some young up-and-coming guys like Willie Adames and some other guys. They've got Austin Meadows in the mix. I like what they're doing. I like their depth. And depth matters so much over a 162-game season. It's huge. It's huge, especially pitching depth, because you're going to have injuries. There are just going to be times where guys are going to be out for 15 days, for 2 months, or something like that. It's a grind of a season. That's why it's a real measure of what your roster is, and not just your opening day roster, but what do you have waiting that can come contribute at the major league level. And I like what the Rays have in their system. So I've got the Yankees, Rays making the wild card, both teams from the AL East. I've got the Angels, Twins, and A's just missing the wild card. So all those three teams, to me, I think are going to be in the mix potentially for a wild card. I think you can definitely eliminate the Blue Jays, the Orioles, the White Sox, the Royals, the Tigers, the Rangers, and the Mariners from contention. I just don't see any way that those teams, even with the best of luck, are going to be able to break through and make the playoffs over some of those teams I've mentioned already. So, again, you're listening to the Extra Bases Podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas from orangebloods.com. This is episode 35. We are doing our MLB predictions episode. Opening day is here. I mentioned at the beginning, I used a lot of exclamation marks. I'm excited. I hope you can feel it in my voice. I'm pretty fired up. I love baseball. I love that you can, you know, for what, 180 or 190 days during the regular season, you can flip on a baseball game. And there's so many really cool storylines that you can follow. So many young up-and-coming players. This new generation of kind of stars. This new era of how we, you know, identify talent with Statcast and exit velocity and spin rate and all of these really cool things, and how we can find out why some of these guys are the best at the game and why they're able to have success, launch angle and all of those things. So there's so many fun tools to play with that make all of these teams interesting. All of these teams have some guys that are worth tuning in and watching because they could do something special every time they're either on the mound, in the field defensively, or in the batter's box. So let's shift over to the National League. I'll start with the East again in the NL. I've got to go on Braves, Nationals, Phillies, Mets, Marlins. And that might surprise a lot of people. I've from what I've read online from, you know, places like Sports Illustrated and ESPN and other places that have done their season predictions, the Nationals and the Phillies are the overwhelming picks to win the National League East, which doesn't really surprise me. You know, I know the Nationals lost Bryce Harper to the Phillies, who added a bunch of guys like JT Realmuto, Gene Segura, Bryce Harper. Obviously, they made some noise in the offseason, and, you know, I can't fault anybody that picks them to win in the division. And I know the Nationals went out and got Patrick Corbin. They've got Victor Robles, who is a mega-talented young outfielder that's, you know, could probably help offset the loss of Bryce Harper. They've got Juan Soto. I am a huge, 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 huge Anthony Rendon guy. You can actually find a post on Orange Bloods, or it might be on the old message boards now, but I actually said once upon a time before they were both drafted, Rendon was still in college. I think it was the year he was eligible to be drafted. I said that Rendon would end up being a better player than Harper. And if you look at the WAR, he's actually been a better. But they got Anthony Rendon. They've got some quality pieces. I think their bullpen could be good. I think that they're a candidate to sign Craig Kimbrell because they got the money and they kind of view this as a window right now. But I just – one of the reasons why I can't pick the Phillies is I just don't believe in Gabe Kapler at all. I don't think that he's a good manager. Somewhere Carlos Santana just heard that and smashed another television because players are playing Fortnite or something like that. The more you read about the guy and stuff like that, I don't know. I just can't envision him for 162 games leading a team in the right direction. I mean, so much of that season grind is you've got to manage personalities and you've got to be able to have your finger on the pulse of the team and press the right buttons and all those things. So I just don't believe in Gabe Kapler as a manager. And that's kind of a tiebreaker in a loaded division, which, you know, besides the NL Central, I think is the most loaded division in Major League Baseball. So the Nationals, for me, like, the Nationals have never won a playoff series. I just have a hard time picking them to do so until they do it, as weird as that sounds. But I don't know, sometimes in sports you see these teams that just can never break through, and it takes them a long, 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 long time to break through. Like, you know, I follow the Red Sox extremely closely. It was a long time between World Series wins for them. Just like it was for the Cubs. You know, you look at the Washington Capitals in the NHL. You look at some of these NBA franchises that can never break through, like the Clippers. Like, I don't know, sometimes in sports that these teams just, the results end up that way for a reason. And, you know, I'm kind of a prove-it-to-me standpoint with the Nationals, although I do end up putting them in the wild card game, I believe. Let me look at my notes real fast. I put them in there. Yeah, I did put them in the wild card. So not totally out on the Nationals. But I picked the Braves to win the division mainly for one reason. The depth they have with their starting pitching. They are loaded with young talent on the mound. I mean, so much so that a guy like Touki Toussaint, who would make a lot of other rotations across baseball, they sent him down to AAA. I mean, he didn't even make the big league club. Mike Soroka is coming back from a mild shoulder issue. I think it was related to like weightlifting or something like that in spring training. He's going to be competing for innings soon. They got Ian Anderson. They got Colby Allard, guys in the minor leagues. You know, by the way, they've got Bryce Wilson and Kyle Wright in their starting rotation to open the year, along with guys like Julio Teheran, Sean Newcomb, Max Fried, once upon a time a first-round prospect. I know Mike Foltynewicz has had some elbow issues, but, you know, he's probably going to be back in the mix this year. So they've got so many arms, and that matters so much over 162 games because, again, these guys are going to get hurt. Just look around already at all the rotations that are kind of dealing with some injury issues. You know, you can look with I've just mentioned the Braves, but you can look at some other places as well with these guys in these rotations that are already having some issues. And it's just it's tough. It's tough to have a rotation stay fully healthy for 162 games. I mean, the big joke with the Mets is like it's just a matter of time before one of their starting pitchers gets hurt. You know, they've had all these guys that are super talented, but I can't remember the time that they've had a season where all of them have stayed healthy. I mean, you think back to Steven Matz, Zach Wheeler, Noah Syndergaard, Matt Harvey when he was at his peak. Like, they've had so many guys that just haven't had luck when it comes to injury history. So the Braves just have so many guys. You know, the Dodgers are dealing with injury issues as well. The Braves just have so many guys that can come up and pitch at an average or better level at the major league level that it's going to help them offset some of those injury issues. And you look at what they have in the lineup too. Ronald Acuña Jr. is a star. Ozzie Albies is emerging as one of the best second basemen in baseball. Freddie Freeman is still Freddie Freeman. I like the gamble they took on Josh Donaldson having a bounce back year. I think that was a really smart move. You look at, you know, Dansby Swanson was the number one overall pick, and I know he hasn't lived up to that, but, you know, there's still some talent in there. You look at Ender Inciarte. Nick Markakis is coming off of a career-type season. So they've got some bats in a lineup too. But I just think you look at their rotation, and you look at that how youthful that team is and the athleticism it has and the energy it plays with. I don't know. I think that sort of thing shows more over 162 games. Now, when you get into the playoffs, it's a bit of a different story. You know, I don't think that I'd predict the Braves to win a seven-game series over some of these other teams in the National League because it's just a different style of game. But over 162 games, it's about your depth and your injury luck and things like that. And I think the Braves are better suited to handle that than some of these teams in the National League East. So I mentioned the Mets. I like what they're doing. Amed Rosario finished the season really well last year. They announced recently that Peter Alonso made the club. I think that he's going to be their opening day first baseman. He's got a chance to break out. Jeff McNeil is a guy a lot of people are high on. Michael Conforto, I think, is going to have a bounce back year. Brandon Nimmo. And then you look at the starters. DeGrom is obviously sensational. Noah Syndergaard is really, really good when he's healthy. Zach Wheeler had an awesome year last year. So they've got some horses in the starting rotation as well. I'm not quite able to push them ahead of some of those other teams in a really, really tough NL East. The Marlins aren't going to hit, but their pitching staff is one of the more underrated pitching staffs in baseball. You look at guys like Pablo Lopez, Sandy Alcantara, you know, Jose Urena, you know, Trevor Richards, Caleb Smith. I mean, they've got some guys that are pretty intriguing as pitchers, and I think that they're going to pitch a lot better than people think, which makes that division even tougher than it already is when you look at those four teams above the Marlins. So, and in the NL Central, I've got the Brewers, Cubs, Cardinals, Pirates, Reds. This division is brutal. It's brutal. I think top to bottom, it is the best division in baseball from a competitiveness standpoint because there are no bad teams in that division. The Reds are really aggressive this offseason trying to push their way into being a contender. The Pirates rotation could be one of the best in baseball. Jameson Taillon, I think with his slider when he added that late last year, I think he's a Cy Young candidate. Chris Archer, if he's healthy, I mean, he wasn't healthy at all last year with that groin issue. He should be really good as a bounce-back guy this year. Joe Musgrove is a really talented arm that had a good year last year. They've got Mitch Keller waiting in AAA to kind of fine-tune some things and break through. They've got a good bullpen, you know, especially with Felipe Vasquez on that back end. So they're going to pitch. I wonder about the offense, but, you know, Jung Ho Kang apparently has his life in order, won the third base job. That's a power boost. I think Adam Frazier is an everyday guy, could hit 290, 295, could be one of the best batting average hitters in the National League. Corey Dickerson had a strong year. Starling Marte is capable of being a 25 homer plus guy with 30 or more steals. Gregory Polanco is close to coming back. I'm not really a big Josh Bell guy. He just doesn't do it for me. I don't think he's athletic. I don't really like the swing. But who knows? He's capable of being a 25 home run guy that adds to them. So they're kind of interesting. I do think the Pirates and Reds are a little bit below those three other teams, the Brewers, the Cubs, the Cardinals, in order. The Brewers are just a complete team, man. They are. With their outfield is terrific. They have some nice pieces in the infield. They can go right. They can match you with right-handed bats. They can match you with left-handed bats. Their bullpen, if it's healthy, is really, really good. And they've got a bunch of guys in their starting rotation that are poised to break out. Brandon Woodruff, Freddie Peralta, Corbin Burns. I mean, they've got some intriguing arms in that rotation. Burns gets the most attention because of his prospect status. I actually think Peralta is a future star. And I know the control is an issue. But this is a guy, from all accounts, that has amazing makeup, great young man, really, really elite fastball because of the extension he gets on that pitch and just how deceiving it is to hitters. I mean, you look at the velocity, and it's not 97, 98 miles an hour, but it hitters act like it is because of his delivery, his extension, and all those things. So I think that he's going to be a guy that's going to strike out 200-plus guys this year. I really think that he's a breakout guy. So they look like a complete team, and you know complete teams do really well over the course of 162 games. I think the Cubs are going to bounce back and be better. Chris Bryant was just – he was never healthy last year. He had that lingering shoulder issue. People forget for the 3 years prior. I mean, he was basically an MVP candidate every single year. I think that he's going to bounce back. The real wild card with them, though, is what are they going to get out of Yu Darvish? Can he stay healthy? If he's healthy – we know that he can, you know, strike guys out at a rate that's elite all time. But it's just been such a struggle for him. But they still do have some quality pieces in that lineup, in the pitching staff. I do worry about the bullpen some because Brandon Morrow's never really stayed healthy. They got guys like CJ Edwards and Pedro Strop and some other guys. So I think that they're going to bounce back. I'm not all the way in on the Cardinals just because their outfield defense really worries me some. I'm not really in love with the middle infield as well. I know Paul Goldschmidt was a big boost for them, but I'm just not quite there yet, pushing them ahead of the Cubs and the Brewers. I think that those two teams are more complete teams. Now, if the Cardinals are able to get into the playoffs, that's a team you don't want to see in the playoffs because of what they could do in the back end of games with their bullpen from a right-left standpoint, just dominant stuff standpoint. And also, if you look on the mound with guys like Jack Flaherty, who's poised to be a breakout star, he's capable of dominating a lineup. If they get Carlos Martinez back to fully healthy, although you worry about guys with a lingering shoulder issue, that's usually not a good sign for a guy over the course of a season. But if they're able to get him back, I mean, they have the type of roster construction to where they could really be a tough out in the playoffs because of the way they can shorten games. So if they get in there, they could be dangerous. The Reds, I know a lot of people are maybe even picking them to be a wild card team. I just don't see it. You know, the loss of Scooter Gennett for a few months is a big blow. I think that they might end up having one of the worst outfield defenses in baseball. Nick Senzel just got hurt again and didn't make the opening day roster. I'm a big Sonny Gray guy. I think Sonny Gray is going to bounce back and have a really, really good year, being reunited with the former pitching coach, getting back to, you know, different pitch usage and those things. He was really good in spring training. But that rotation doesn't have a whole lot else. I know people are really high on Luis Castillo. I concede at times, but he kind of is this internet analytics darling, which, hey, I'm all about the internet and analytics and all that type of analysis. But I just don't see it with him. He gives up too much homers. He has too many big innings. But who knows? He's capable of putting it all together. Alex Wood, another guy. Can he stay healthy? If he's healthy, he's good. If he's not healthy, which usually happens all the time, you can't really use him. So I'm not there with the Reds. Looking down at the NL West, I've got the Dodgers, Padres, Rockies, Diamondbacks, and Giants. I'm all in on the Padres. All in, man. I am so in on that team as not only being a good team, but one of the more entertaining teams in baseball. But the Dodgers are clearly the class of the NL West. And the Padres just recently named that, you know, Fernando Tatis Jr. not only made the team, he's going to be their starting shortstop on opening day. He just turned 20. He just turned 20 years old. And I love that we're seeing in baseball right now these teams that don't have to push up these guys and can hold them back for service time reasons. They're not manipulating the service time. They're saying, you know what? He makes us a better baseball team. What a novel idea. Why don't we play him? Because we can, and we want to win baseball games. So they're an example of doing that the right way, I think. And I know the White Sox just signed Eloy Jimenez to a deal and pushed him back onto the big league club, but they were going to try to manipulate that, if not for the long-term extension. Heck, maybe that manipulation helped them sign him to a long-term extension. But, you know, a guy in Fernando Tatis Jr. is making a team. Chris Paddock, a pitcher, who is my number one breakout starting pitcher for young guys this year, a Cedar Park product from just outside Austin. He didn't have to make the opening day roster right away. They could have kept him down, but he made the opening day roster. So I'm all in the Padres. Framil Reyes is going to mash if he's an everyday guy. We're talking 30-plus homers. He is a lot of fun to watch. They've got a really athletic infield. I think that they've got a good bullpen. I mean, Robert Stock is throwing 101 miles per hour. Kirby Yates is a good back-end guy. They just seem to always have some relievers coming out. And their rotation is sneaky good. Joey Lucchesi, I mentioned Paddock. Matt Stram is a lot of fun to watch. They've got some guys that can really miss bats in that staff. So I'm all in on the Padres, and I've got them finishing second in NL West ahead of the Rockies, Diamondbacks, and Giants. The Giants will be one of the worst teams in baseball. The Diamondbacks just suffered a really gruesome injury yesterday when Steven Souza Jr., I think he slipped on home plate and basically had about as bad as a knee injury as you could have. I mean, tore the ACL and all those things, but it was worse than that somehow. So that's the difference between 4 and 5 wins. You take that guy, what he can do defensively and things like that, that's a big blow to the Diamondbacks. And it actually, you know, made me push them down the NL West list. Can the Rockies get enough out of their starting pitching? It was really a strength over their offense last year. Their offense was kind of missing. I think they could use some offensive punch. They've got some young guys coming in Ryan McMahon, Garrett Hampson. How do they manage that with just this dumb Ian Desmond contract? I mean, they've got Ramil Tapia waiting, but they don't have anywhere to play him. David Dahl, they need to play him every day. He could be a breakout guy. But I just think that they're behind the Dodgers and the Padres. So National League wild card, I've got the Cubs and the Nationals being the NL wild card. I've got the Padres, Cardinals, Phillies, and Mets is just missing the wild card. So the National League is going to be very competitive this year, I think. American League Championship Series, Astros versus Red Sox. A little bit of a rematch there from the playoffs last year. National League Championship Series, Cubs and Dodgers. I've got the World Series being the Astros and the Dodgers with the Astros winning the World Series. I have a really hard time predicting teams to repeat because we hardly ever see it. There's something about going through that grind and that emotion and all those things and then having to recoup and then getting back to spring training and finding that same sense of urgency and want to and energy and all these things. It's tough, man. These guys are humans. It's hard to have that same mindset after winning a world championship. Whereas if you've got a team like the Astros who have a bad taste in their mouth or the Dodgers that have a bad taste in their mouth, I think it's easier for those teams to meet their potential because they're so motivated and so fixated on getting to the World Series. So I've got the Astros winning the World Series. They're a complete bunch. And they also have a lot of what I like to call prospect currency, to where if they need to go make a big move and add somebody, they can go out and do that. And they've got some young stars waiting in the wings, or potential stars. Guys are going to rate very, very high on prospect lists in Forrest Whitley and Kyle Tucker. So that's it for my predictions. I hope I went through those quickly enough. We've already burned through a little over 30 minutes in this podcast. Oh, my player predictions. MVP, Mike Trout and Ronald Acuna Jr. Let's see, Rookie of the Year, Eloy Jimenez in the American League and Chris Paddock in the NL. I mean, I'm all in on Chris Paddock. I'm all in. Cy Young, Garrett Cole in the AL, Jacob DeGrom in the NL. I know DeGrom just won it, but man, I mean, he's really, really good. He's so much fun to watch. Pitchers that make a big comeback this year, National League, Sonny Gray, American League, Marcus Stroman. Hitters that make a big comeback this year, Josh Donaldson in the NL and Byron Buxton in the AL. If Buxton can just have a full season, man, I really think that you'll start to see some of his true talents show. So some last-minute fantasy tips as we finish off this edition of the Extra Bases Podcast. I'm Dustin McComas. This is episode 35. You're listening to theyak.com/Austin. And some fantasy tips for you last-minute drafters, or maybe you're just looking for some advice as you head into the fantasy baseball season. I'm a gigantic fantasy baseball nerd. I'll probably be talking about it at length as much as I can, especially when, you know, basketball winds down and my schedule becomes a little bit more predictable. I'm treating this kind of as a weekly league standpoint. The more I do fantasy baseball, the more I prefer weekly leagues, or just leagues that where there's only one free agent ad session a week. It's just too hard now to beat the daily fantasy ad stuff. I mean, that's, you basically have to be the guy that, you know, is always looking at your phone or paying attention or something like that. And let's be honest, we all do have some lives that get away from the computer at some point. So I'm kind of treating this discussion standpoint from the weekly free agent ad as opposed to a day-to-day type thing. My advice would be aggressive with those potential breakout guys. I like to, at the first few rounds, get some high upside but safe picks, you know, like your starting pitchers, like your Jacob deGroms and your Chris Sales and your Max Scherzers and things like that. Or hitting wise, you know, Christian Yelich, if you're fortunate enough to get Mike Trout or Mookie Betts. But even down the list, some, you know, a guy like Alex Bregman, who I got 11th overall in my NFBC draft a few days ago. Just try to nail those first, you know, 3-4 round picks. So when you get to rounds, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, and so on, if you want to be aggressive with an high upside guy, you're able to do it because you've built yourself a little bit of a floor. And there are a lot of, you know, every year there are a lot of, you know, potential breakout guys. But I think this year there's even more so just because of the influence of young talent that's kind of taking over baseball right now. You look at, I mentioned earlier in the podcast, a guy like Freddy Peralta with the Brewers. Big time strikeout numbers. He made the rotation. That's a guy you could be aggressive with. Chris Paddock, I mentioned. I mean, he made the rotation. I watched him in his last spring training start when they were in an exhibition game at Seattle. He pitched 3 2/3 innings, and I think he struck out 4 or 6 guys. And his changeup's his best pitch, and his changeup was kind of just blah. I mean, he was just blown fastballs by guys, fastball command. That's a guy you can be aggressive with. If you think somebody like Sonny Gray is going to bounce back, which I think he will, it's a guy you can be aggressive with. Chris Archer, I think, is a guy there's a lot of value with, returning to form in Pittsburgh, you know, especially when Pittsburgh has been pretty good with run prevention type stuff as well. Jack Flaherty, a young up-and-coming arm that I think is going to be a breakout guy. So if you have these guys on your list that you think, man, this guy's going to break out, I think that he's going to have a really, really good year, be aggressive with them. Be aggressive with them, because if you hit on just a percentage of those guys, the value you can accumulate as it relates to the rest of your league is big. I mean, it's one of the reasons why I've been trying to snatch up Eloy Jimenez everywhere I can. Because if he hits like I think he's going to hit and like all the projection models think he's going to hit, you're basically getting a second or third round talent in the 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th round or something like that. That's how you can win leagues, is when you hit on those potential breakout guys, because not many people are going to screw up the first 2 or 3 rounds. You know, it really just comes down to, are you taking, you know, guys that don't really have much of an injury history? And if you get hit with an injury with one of those guys, it's just bad luck. I mean, but if you're taking some guy that's always hurt in the first 3 rounds, of course, you're leaving yourself open to having that situation backfire on you. But it really gets down to hitting on some of those upside picks. You know, Eloy Jimenez is a guy I mentioned. Peter Alonso in New York is a guy that I have on teams. Potential breakout guy. I mentioned Framil Reyes, another guy that could add a lot of power. You know, Victor Robles. You know, speed is such a tough commodity to find in fantasy leagues right now. That's a guy that's going to have everyday playing time that could really, really run. Ronald Acuna Jr. going in the first round, I'm all aboard. You know, that home run steal power. You know, Christian Yelich matching his numbers, things like that. So if you think that a guy is going to break out, like, I think Yoan Moncada is going to be a better player this year. I think that the aggressive approach, the way the ball jumps off his bat, if he can just increase his contact rate, not even necessarily cut down on the strikeouts a ton, but just increase the rate he makes contact hard, I think that that's going to lead to his numbers being a lot better. I think that he's more experienced now. That's a guy I'm targeting in leagues. Adam Frazier, with his positional flexibility and his batting average and the little steals he gives you, is another late-round guy that I'm kind of targeting. So be aggressive with those potential breakout guys or guys that you think are undervalued, especially this late in the year or when you're going through the free agent ads and things like that. Don't hesitate. You know, I remember picking up Ross Stripling early on last season in my Dynasty League, and I was able to keep him for this year's roster. I watched him a few times. I looked at the numbers, and people were just kind of sleeping on him because he hadn't really done it before. He didn't have this prospect pedigree. The Dodgers had so many arms in the rotation, but he kept throwing the shit out of the ball. And the Dodgers always have injury issues with some of those guys in the rotation. So I grabbed him, and it turned out to just be a steal. I remember grabbing Freddy Peralta early on because I looked at his minor league numbers. You know, sometimes these guys, and Chris Paddock is a good example of this, sometimes these guys with these elite minor league numbers, you got to understand that these people are that are publishing prospect lists, they're not getting around to seeing all of these guys. And internally, some of the ratings from organizations with Major League Baseball are going to always different than these published prospect lists because they just can't get around to see all these guys. They can't get all the information. So you've got a guy in Paddock that's got these amazing AA numbers, but he kind of slowly climbed up the prospect list because he didn't have this hype and pedigree as some of the other guys on that list. So pay attention to the minor league numbers with some of these guys. Pay attention to the projection models. I do think that you can find some values in, and you can be aggressive with that. I mean, upside is king when it comes to winning these leagues. I mean, that's how you win, is a lot of times it comes down to just having injury luck with those first, you know, 4 or 5 round picks, hitting those at a pretty high rate, hitting on some of your breakout guys, and then adding some quality players throughout the league. Closers suck. That's literally what I wrote down in my notes. Closers suck. There are a handful of really, really good ones that have a firm grip on their job. I would recommend, if it doesn't cost you too much in terms of draft value and you're not overdrafting these guys relative to their average draft position, I would say to grab one really, really good one, and not totally punt the rest, but just take a flyer on some guys later on that could be in the mix for saves or kind of have the job right now. Because if you look at the closer depth chart, you know, places like ESPN and Fantasy Pros that kind of ranks the hold that these guys have on the job, there's so many of them that just don't have much of a grip on that job. And as these teams become more and more progressive in the way they treat high leverage situations in their reliever usage, I think that we're going to see more teams kind of spread out those save opportunities across multiple relievers as opposed to just one. So try to grab an elite one if it won't cost you that much, and then really don't worry about it. Just take a couple guys that could be in contention to get some saves, and you're probably going to have to add some guys off the waivers at some point. I think statistically the hardest set stat to find, and that could really doom you over the course of a season, especially in roto leagues, is batting average. As we've seen this, you know, the increase in strikeouts, the increase in power, and you know, three true outcomes and all these things, it's harder to find big time batting average guys. And that's one thing that if you get into the season, and let's say that, you know, you've got a bunch of power guys, but your team batting average is like 260 or something like that, or 265. It's hard to make up for that over the course of a season because you've already accumulated so many collective at-bats that are going to kind of weigh down that average over the course of a season. So when I play roto leagues this year, I really like to place a little bit of an extra emphasis on batting average just because it's harder to find on the waiver wire. And it's harder to find, period, in baseball right now. And if you have a poor batting average, it's going to weigh that roster down the rest of the season, no matter what you do. No matter if you hit on a great ad 2 months into the season that a guy hits 300. Well, you've already got, what, 9, 10, 11, 12 guys that have 2 months worth of at-bats that have posted this batting average. And it's going to be tough to raise that batting average. So try to create what I call a kind of a high batting average-based floor early on in the draft, because it also allows you to be more aggressive with steals or power or prospects like later on in the draft. Like Fernando Tatis Jr. is a good example of this. He might only hit 230 this year. He's going to have some homers. He's going to have some steals. He's going to play awesome defense for the Padres. But you're able to take a chance on that guy later in the draft if you've afforded yourself that opportunity by what you do with your batting average early in the draft, if that makes sense. As for stolen bases, they're overvalued right now, but they're overvalued for a reason. There's not much of them. There's not many guys that are, you know, 30 homer, 30 steal guys, or there's not many guys that are 30 steal guys, period, now in baseball. So it kind of inflates the value of players like Alberto Mondesi, of Billy Hamilton, Byron Buxton, Victor Robles, You know, Whit Merrifield, these guys that are just going to run all the time and have these steals. So, you know, stolen bases are overvalued for a reason. It's just harder to find them. And it's another reason why if you build yourself a good batting average base, you can take a chance on Byron Buxton, Billy Hamilton, or Cedric Mullins or somebody like that later in the draft that could steal you 30, could swipe 30 bags for you, but also might only hit 240. Well, that's not going to kill your average as much if you've got a bunch of your guys in your lineup that are proven, you know, 290, 300 type hitters that can kind of carry your batting average. So, you know, the stolen bases, I would say try to get a guy. You can't, it's really hard to win both in head-to-head and roto if you totally punt a category. Like if you totally punt stolen bases, that's tough, man. That's tough, especially in some of these leagues where you can play for like grand prizes. Like I'm playing for a grand prize in the NFBC league, which if you're the best RotoWire online championship team, you win $125,000. Well, there's zero chance I could be even in contention for that at all if I punted steals. So you do have to get some stolen base presence, and that's why it's important to, if you're not going to get one of those guys early in the draft or a bunch of those combo stolen base power guys like your Christian Yeliches and your Ronald Acuñas and stuff like that and Mookie Betts, you've got to build that batting average base to where you can add some of those steal guys late that aren't going to kill your batting average. So that's it. I've rambled on enough. I'm excited. Major League Baseball opening day has arrived, which means the fantasy baseball opening day has arrived. I hope that I have entertained you and kind of quenched that baseball thirst. We went through all of my predictions for the Major League Baseball season. We went through my last minute fantasy baseball tips and advice if you're still drafting or if you're, you know, getting into your roster management and looking to make some free agent ads and things like that or some trades as the week goes on. So thank you for listening. I'm Dustin McComas from OrangeBloods.com. This is Extra Bases Episode 35 on theyak.com /Austin. Get to theyak.com and check out all of our great podcast content. You know, the Drunk Uncle podcast from Anwar Richardson, Something's Brewing from Jason Sukumil. I've got a Drop of Dimes podcast. We've got a lot of podcasts. Get to theyak.com. Take advantage of that subscription. In the meantime, just enjoy opening day. If you're able to get out to a ballpark this weekend, I'm jealous. It's one of my favorite times of the year. So enjoy baseball being back. I'm excited. I hope you are as well. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. And until then, take care and we'll see you next time.